If you go back to the days of Jesus' earthly ministry, the Sea of Galilee must have been crowded with boats. In fact, Josephus, the historian, tells us about one particular occasion during the War of the Jews, that it was necessary to assemble an armada of boats to deal with a rebellion that was taking place at Tiberias. And at that point, they actually successfully mobilized no fewer than 230 ships on the Sea of Galilee. Well, you think about the friends of Jesus. And many of the friends of Jesus were fishermen. And being fishermen, they had boats. So when Jesus wanted a little peace and quiet, he would sail with his fishermen friends to the other side of the lake or the Sea of Galilee. And there Jesus would have peace and quiet. He would have a chance to recharge his batteries and refresh his soul. But in the 8th chapter of his gospel account, Dr. Luke tells us of an occasion where Jesus wanted some R&R. And so he and the disciples embarked upon the Sea of Galilee. They set sail to the other side. Now keep in mind what these boats, these ships on the Sea of Galilee were like. They were large. And they were a little bit unwieldy. They had one mast. And they had actually one giant triangular sail. And at the stern of the boat, just in front of the helmsman, there was a little platform. And it was like a small deck. And upon that platform, or that small deck, was a cushion. And the custom of the time was that a distinguished guest on board the ship would sit there while they sailed. Well, as they set sail to the other side of the Sea of Galilee that night, that's where Jesus was. He was on a cushion on that little platform or that deck in front of the helmsman, there in the stern of the boat. And my Lord was tired. He was weary. And Jesus went to sleep. That tells us something about him. That tells us something of the humanity of Jesus. It also tells us something more. He had been busy that day preaching and teaching and healing the sick. And it tells us that the exhausting work of preaching and healing was so taxing upon him that it just literally, as we would say, took the starch out of him. But it also tells us something else. It tells us how much he trusted his friends. You see, Jesus knew the dangers of the Sea of Galilee. He knew about the sudden squalls, the sudden storms that the sea was famous for. He knew about that as well as any other man. But he trusted the skill of his friends as seafaring men. And he slept. And he slept in peace. He trusted the skill, the resources of his fisherman friends that night. And yet, as you read Dr. Luke's account in Luke chapter 8, they hadn't gone far before they encountered a fear-provoking circumstance. One of those sudden, tremendous squalls that Galilee was famous for hit their boat. The winds were fierce. The winds were boisterous. The waves were high. They were in danger of their lives. And you know what Jesus was doing? He was sleeping. He slept on. In their sheer terror, the disciples woke him up. And they asked him, they said, "Does it mean nothing to you, Master? Does it mean nothing to you? We're all likely to die and you're sound asleep. Don't you even care? The wind couldn't wake him. The thunder, the lightning, the noise of the waves crashing against the boat couldn't wake him. But the frightened cry of those disciples woke him. And with a word, Jesus stilled the waves and the wind was calm. Jesus said, "Peace, be still." And then he looked at his disciples and he asked them. He asked them where their faith was. He wanted to know, why did you lose your nerve like you did? I like the way the Message translates it. The Message translates it with Jesus asking those frightened disciples, "Why can't you trust me?" Friends, there is a lot more in that story than simply the fact that one night on the Sea of Galilee, Jesus calmed a storm. If that's all there was, it would still be a wonderful, beautiful story. But it wouldn't have anything very practical in it for me or for you in Center, Texas in 2025. But that story has a meaning in it and a message in it that affects every one of us here this morning. That story tells us that when Jesus comes into our lives, the storms become calm. It means that Jesus can and Jesus does bring peace to us in the storms that life brings to us. We, you and I, we must learn to trust Jesus Christ. Now know this. Trusting in Jesus will not prevent the storms of life. Faith in Christ and trusting in Jesus Christ is not going to prevent the storms. There are storms that are going to come. There are storms of temptation that are going to come and occur in our lives. There are going to be times that we're going to be very seriously tempted to do something that we know is wrong. There are going to be times that temptation will come that threatens to take us away and sweep us from the moorings that we have in our lives. But during those times, there is no safety like the memory of Jesus Christ. In times of temptation, if we were all alone, completely and absolutely, we might do something we would regret. We might do something quite shameful. But if we thought we might turn around and see the hurt eyes of someone we loved looking at us, we'd never do it. If we thought we might turn around like Peter did after he denied Jesus, and Peter looked into the eyes of Jesus and he saw the hurt look in Jesus' face and he went out and he wept bitterly. When the storms of temptation blow into our lives, we must remember Jesus Christ is there to see us and see our response to that temptation, but he's also there to help us. He's there to help see us through that temptation, and that's going to bring peace in the storms of life, in the storm of temptation. We're going to have storms of passion in our lives. There are going to be times that we're going to be apt to be swept away in the heat of the moment. We find that especially true sometimes if we have a hot temper, or we have strong feelings about things. I read the story once of a French courtier who had a most ungovernable temper. He was always saying and doing things that he was sorry for afterwards, saying and doing things he deeply regretted. And he had a friend that knew him and knew him well. And this friend knew exactly the kind of thing that annoyed him. One day, this man was in the presence of the king. And one of those annoying things happened, and his friend just stood there holding his breath to see what might happen. And he kept his temper. And after it was over, his friend said to him, "I was so surprised when that incident occurred. I was so proud that you kept your temper so well." And the courtier said, "I had to. The king was there. And I couldn't lose my temper in the presence of the king." His friend looked at him and quietly said, "I wish you would remember that wherever you are in the presence of the King of Kings." You know, if you watch the news reports today, there are a lot of politicians in our day and time, a lot of political pundits, and a lot of so-called comedians and entertainers and celebrities that would do well to remember that also. I hear politicians and celebrities on television say things that aren't fit to be said at midnight with the stars punched out. In fact, I saw a woman the other day. She said, "Well, I'm going to say this. I don't cuss very well, but I'm going to say this anyway." And then she let out with a string of cursing and swearing. And she said, "Oh, don't tell my children I did that." You're ashamed for your kids to know you did that? Then why in the name of common sense did you do it to start with? And whether your kids know it or not, and whether it ever made the 6 o'clock news or not, the God of heaven heard you say it. Like I said, there are a lot of politicians and celebrities in our day and time that need to realize that no matter what they say, God is there to witness it. And I've got to stop at this point, or I'm going to fall into the trap of temptation to giving a political speech instead of preaching a gospel sermon. But we've got to remember that when the storms of passion come into our lives, God is there to help us and to walk with us. If we would remember that Jesus is always watching and Jesus is always present, it'll bring a new calm to us when the storms of our passionate nature threaten to sweep us away. But because it's always easier to face something in company than it is when we're alone. I've read of a certain Native American tribe that had a rite of passage for their teenage boys. At age 13, a boy who was a member of this tribe was taken out into the woods. And he was blindfolded at this certain spot in the woods. And he would be forced to sit down, blindfolded out in the middle of the woods, while the men of the tribe returned to the camp. And the boy would then be required to sit there all night and keep his blindfold in place. He was forced to listen to all the frightening sounds of the night, the howling of the wild animals and everything else that happened. Once he felt the warmth of the morning sun, he was allowed to remove his blindfold. The first thing he saw when he removed his blindfold was his father sitting across from him in the woods. He had been there all night. protecting him from the animals of the wilderness. But he was not seen by his son. We've got to remember that God is like that. God is with us through the long, dark nights of temptation that we face. God is there. God is with us. God is watching over us. We must remember our Father is always with us. Sometimes the storms of suffering come. And when the storms of suffering come, they test our faith in God. They test our trust in God. What a storm is to the house, suffering is to a human life. And suffering will soon reveal the character of that life. And suffering is allowed for that purpose. Economic conditions can cause suffering. Emotional stress can cause suffering. It's impossible to live in this world without encountering stressful situations, stressful circumstances. And then, of course, there are physical problems. And physical problems can cause suffering. Cancer, heart attacks, strokes, all kinds of other debilitating diseases and physical ailments. They don't simply fall on heathens. They don't simply fall on the foolish. There are times that the saintly can suffer and do suffer. Faith and trust in God, it does not prevent the storms of life. And faith and trust in God does not prevent fear. Fear is a sign that our faith has failed. Faith does prevent fear in our lives. When we're afraid, our faith has failed. When we're afraid, our trust is weak. There on that Sea of Galilee that night, what happened with that group of disciples? Oh, it was a very natural thing. Any ordinary, prudent human being would have been frightened by that storm. Any ordinary person would have been afraid that they were going to sink to the very bottom of the sea. But this little group of men, they weren't supposed to act like ordinary men. They were the friends of Jesus. They had been spending time with Jesus all these years. These men knew Jesus Christ. They knew Jesus Christ personally. They knew the power of Jesus Christ. And they even had Jesus in the boat with them. Those men should have been able to go through that storm completely unfazed and unruffled by its effects. Now let's be honest. Let's be honest with each other. Let's be honest with ourselves. Let's be honest with God. All of us have known fear in some form at one time or another. It may have been a fear of failure. It may have been fear of the test results that we were about to get from the doctor. It may have been the fear of losing a job. It may be the fear of death. It may have been the fear of rejection by someone that was important to us. But Jesus tells us where to lay the blame for fear. Jesus tells us to lay the blame for fear squarely upon our lack of faith. What did He say to those disciples? He said, "Why can't you trust Me?" This fear, it does not come from circumstances. This fear comes from within us. But the faith, the trust that prevents fear rests in Jesus Christ. Jesus wanted the disciples to depend on Him in those dangerous circumstances. When asked where their faith was, He was calling attention to the adequacy that He had to handle whatever situation that came their way. That's a lesson you and I desperately need to learn. We desperately need to learn that our faith must rest in Jesus Christ. Not in our own abilities, not in our own wisdom, but in Jesus Christ. Faith is resting in the person of Jesus Christ. You think about those disciples that night on the Sea of Galilee. They had Jesus in the boat with them. Did they not know who He was? He had given them numerous indications of His identity. They knew that He was the Son of God. Did those disciples really think that the Son of God would be swallowed up in a little storm on the Sea of Galilee that night? Here's the question that comes down to me and to you today. We know about Jesus Christ. We know the facts of Jesus Christ. We know that He was the Son of God, that He was born in a manger in Bethlehem, that He was crucified on Calvary's cross, and that He was raised from the dead. We know that He walked the dusty roads of Palestine, healed the sick, raised the dead, made the lame to walk, the blind to see, and the deaf to hear. We know all about Jesus Christ. But do we know Jesus Christ? Do we really know who Jesus is? He's the Lord of history. He's the living God. And Jesus is able to subdue all things to Himself. Faith is you and me resting in the promises of Jesus. The disciples missed it. When Jesus said, "Let's go over to the other side," the command to go over to the other side was the promise of Jesus that He was going to be with them and He was going to care for them and He was going to protect them. Write this down. It's on the final exam. When Jesus commands, Jesus enables. And fear has no place in the same heart with faith. Now here's the question before the house this morning. Are we living by faith or are we living by fear? Jesus comes to us today asking the same question He asked them. Where is your faith? Why can't you trust Me? If we remember that Jesus Christ is always with us, every storm of life that comes into our world becomes a calm. But there's a caveat to that. The storms of life will only become a calm when Jesus Christ is the Lord and Master of your life. I've said this 1,000 times at least. This will make 1,001. If Jesus Christ is not Lord and Master of all of your life, He's not Lord and Master at all in your life. So the question is, are there changes that you need to make? Perhaps you need to surrender your life to Him for the very first time. You need to repent of everything that's sin in your life, confess His name, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of past sins. And then all things will become new and you'll be trusting in Jesus Christ and He'll be Lord and Master of your life. And then perhaps once upon a time you did that. But over the years, over time, you began to rely less and less on Jesus Christ and more on your own wit and your own ability. And faith hasn't really been a part of your life. You need to come back to the Lord and say, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. I don't know what might be going on in your world. I don't know what needs there might be. But if we can help you to make Jesus the Lord and Master of all of your life, and there are changes we can help you make, this is your opportunity to come and let us do that. As together we stand and while we sing.